Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Ewoks. As we anxiously await the final Clone Wars series bonus episodes, we will be looking back this summer as we watch and review all episodes of this classic Star Wars TV series.
Welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, where we're spending the summer months discussing the Ewoks animated series from 1985 and 1986. I'm Jonathan, and joining me, stranded on the forest moon of Endor, are Nathan P. Butler.
Hey guys, get ready for some tumble bunnies!
Barrett.
Hey Jonathan, Jerry, Nathan, good to be back to talk some Ewoks.
And Jerry.
Hey guys, glad to be back.
So today we're discussing four stories from 1986, starting with Horville's Hut of Horrors, The Tragic Flute, Just My Luck, and Bringing Up Norky. Horville's Hut of Horrors was originally released November 15th, 1986. And Nathan, where can they find this lovely episode?
Well, just like all of Season 2, nowhere, at least not officially at this point. Keep an eye out for conventions, though, because there's usually bootleggers abounding with these, though sometimes I wonder why.
How could you not want to see the masterpiece that is Season 2? Horville's Hut of Horrors. Shodu Warwick asked Wicket to take his younger sibling, Winda, to see the Tumble Bunnies with the other Walklings, promising to consider letting him go on a warrior trip with the older Ewoks if he does. Instead, Wicket convinces Nissa, Teebo, and Latara to join in taking the Walklings to Horville's Hut of Horrors, which Wicket thinks would be more fun. Despite Nissa's reservation, they go through the Hut of Horrors, which scares the Walklings terribly. So as to make all the Walklings forget about the Hut of Horrors and not to get Wicket in trouble, they hold a sleepover for the Walklings at the Warwick home. Teebo uses a magic device to suck the bad dreams from the Walklings and send them out into the night air. This saves the Walklings from nightmares, but the creatures from the bad dreams are taken in by Wicket, who has his own nightmares. He awakens, terrified, and confesses to Shodu. He is punished by having to perform with the Tumble Bunnies instead of going on the warrior's trip. So guys, Horville's Hut of Horrors. Did you find it frightening?
Why does this little carnival they're going to even have a Hut of Horrors?
Well, you know, it's for the older kids, you know. I come from a town in Indiana, Evansville, that has what I believe is the second largest street festival in the U.S. outside of Mardi Gras, which is number one. Fall festival, and you've got a little bit for everybody. You've got your tumble bunny type stuff down on one end of Franklin Street, where you've got, you know, just the little kiddie rides. They don't go too fast. They kind of have the little cars that you can honk the horns, and they make that horrible screeching sound. You got a giant slide, and that's about it. You go down past the food booths and such, and down on the other end, down by the library, you've got this massive area with the zipper and all these different, more adult-style rides. You've got all the type games where you can win stuff, a lot of which is more adult-oriented stuff. And I could see a festival wanting to have stuff for the younger kids and the older ones. That works. I'm surprised that the Hut of Horrors by a guy named Horville isn't a brothel. But, you know, I think from a festival standpoint, it works. What gets me about it is, you know, again, it's beating us over the head with that same message. When you do something for yourself because you're selfish, it's going to go badly. It's beating us over the head with that same thing that we've seen over and over again, especially in this season. Though I would compare this, what Wicket does, to the reason why usually I don't go to the movies anymore. The little kids, the babies at the movie theater. When I was in college, I worked for a little while at a movie theater as an usher and a concessions guy. And I would see people come in and bring, like, babies, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, five-year-olds into R-rated horror movies. And aside from the fact that, you know, it's dumb to bring a teeny tiny kid to a movie anyway in case they cry or something like that, just it's not kind to the other audience members, what the hell are they doing as parents bringing a kid that young to see, like, something along the vein of Nightmare on Elm Street, something that has the imagery that's possibly going to cause them nightmares? It's just the parents saying, well, we care about our entertainment more than we care about the possible welfare of our child, and just like Wicket, nobody's going to tell me different. I mean, this is kind of one of the times where Ewoks kind of gives us a window into our own society, and not in a good way.
Barrett, as a parent, what do you think?
as a parent, I think that the Ewoks are constantly lying all the time. They're not following directions at all. These are the characters we're supposed to like. These are the characters that we are supposed to allow our children to like. And Wicket totally disobeys his mother. And his mother is a really cool mother. As a father, it's really cool mother. And to your point, Nathan, about bringing children into R-rated movies, that's why marriage is such a sanctity. Because anytime I got that idea to bring my son into an R-rated movie, there was always my wife right there to smack me over the head and say, "Are you crazy? You cannot take him to go see whatever it is." And, you know, there holds some sort of balance there. But it's... this, I just noticed all the lying that's going on, and there seems to be not really any repercussions, because as long as they come out and they tell the truth at the end, then nothing really happens. Jonathan, one other thing I'm starting to notice is that Tumble Bunny mascot, my friend, is that the Ted Bundy of Endor? Because that thing looked like a cross between Bane and Donald Duck. That was more terrifying than anything in the Horrorville's Hut of Horror.
That certainly scared me. Jerry, what do you think?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, the whole thing about the parenting side of it, I mean, clearly Wicket isn't the parent here, so he's just an older sibling, whatever, who makes a bad decision. So, I don't really think there's much of a tale there to reflect on. But what kind of frustrates me about this is that I hated the fact that Wicket was given an opportunity. It's like, hey, I'll let you go on the Warriors weekend, which has got to be like the equivalent of like Disney World for Wicket. And he's like, oh, well, I'll just take him to see the little horror show. No one's ever going to find out. I mean, come on. It'd been one thing if maybe the mom just said, hey, now you make sure you watch him today, or, you know, whatever. You know, the fact that there was something at stake, like the Warriors weekend, that Warriors trip, whatever it's called, the fact that Wicket would be so stupid to put that at risk, it kind of frustrated me. I just think it was, you know, a little, I don't know. I hate to use the term suspension of disbelief here, because, come on, it's Ewoks. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I don't even think Wicket would have put that at risk.
You know, Jerry, as the other parent on this line, I agree with you. I think you just explained it a little bit better than I explained it, that Wicket had the opportunity to do the right thing, to gain something that he really liked, something that we as parents try to instill in our own children, that if they work hard and they're given the opportunity, if a door is open for them, they need to walk through it with their head up high and do their best. The fact that Wicket did not do that and he chose to be deceitful, I think kids understand that. And as parents, that was an ouch kind of thing. So yes, Jerry, thank you for explaining that a little bit better than I did.
And he did, at least in this formulaic, you know, Full House kind of way, he did at least get punished this time. You know, he didn't get to go on the Warrior trip. Instead, they apparently found a way to go to this festival and say, hey, you Tumble Bunnies, you need somebody else for your show? We're gonna force this child onto you as a performer because he did wrong. So granted, it's a great punishment that fits the crime, so to speak, because he kept them from being at the Tumble Bunnies because he thought it wasn't cool enough. Now he has to be part of it. You didn't want to wear the tie? Fine, now you're going to wear a bow tie. Though Doctor Who would say bow ties are cool. It's at least giving us that this time. Because a lot of times it tended to be them just getting whatever they wanted at the end. If this was season one, it would have been, oh, okay, you know better. Enjoy your weekend. But not this time. Not ever since Shodu became black.
I'm glad I'm not the only one to see it. That
hey, I teach in an area where you can tell the strict parents, and most of my strictest parents in this area tend to be the black ones who don't take any crap. But a lot of the white parents are afraid of their children almost, it seems like. There's something topsy-turvy in Atlanta at this point.
I have to say, as the mental health professional, there's something heartwarming about teaching through humiliation, which is what they do to Wicket at the end there. But the other thing, did anybody feel bad for little Winda when she was begging to go see the Tumble Bunnies and Wicket's like, nope, we're going to drag you all in this terror, you know, this haunted house?
I didn't feel bad then, but just the amount of crying that goes on, that anything sets them back off, was interesting. Because even when they were sitting around the table and trying to talk about something different, everybody's spirits back up and keep them away from it, they just kept being drawn back to the Hut of Horrors and just the crying and the bawling. I mean, that I can at least emphasize was, I mean, I've got, you know, young nephews, nieces, I've been around people with kids quite a bit. And yeah, to them, anything that happens, it's almost like the fear of the time or the being upset of the time, when they remember the incident, it almost brings everything back 100%. It's one of the things about child psychology. You got to be careful about what you expose them to because of how raw the emotional feeds are at the time. And they nail it with the Walklings this time.
Ewok post-traumatic stress.
But don't worry, because you can take care of those nightmares with the weird magic air sucking balloon looking thing that pulls the nightmares out of your head, but can in theory unleash them to spin above somebody else's head and give them nightmares. Freddy Krueger, eat your heart out.
I love this little device. I mean, more Ewok tech. I mean, anytime we're introduced to Ewok tech in this series, I'm all over it. I'm seeing a toy, you know, some kind of pack-in on a special edition somewhere, Hasbro. I mean, this thing is great. It's made out of wood. It'll suck your dreams away. My mom doesn't have to know. Ewok problem solved.
And this apparently is a hereditary problem because Weechi did this same thing to Willy.
That's big brother, little brother stuff right there. But no, I have actually seen just something that popped into my head. I don't know if it's still on YouTube or not. A lot of the old Ewok stuff is gone. They probably just pulled it at Lucasfilm's insistence. But at one point, they took Wicket's dream sequence, which is freaky as it is. You know, you've got everything from the balloons from earlier in the episode that looked like the ghosts from Pac-Man showing up in the dream. You've got everybody laughing at him. You've got Horville showing up and laughing. And he's kind of freaking out and everything. They took that, and I guess they looped it and added some more bits from earlier in the season, but they played it to the music of a Dream Warriors from, what was that, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, I guess it
three.
Was? But they played the Dream Warriors theme over that, and it was perfect. Absolutely perfect for what Wicket goes through here.
Well, I didn't want to upset some of our fans, but before we started this episode, I was going to do my greeting with the Dream Warriors course of that song. So it's funny you brought that up, Nathan, because I mean, yeah, that's kind of what you think of here. And you know, I guess that's really an interesting. I guess the story back to the kids watching the show. I mean, like you guys already said, I mean he gets his punishment. He doesn't get what he wants. He has to go through what he wasn't willing to go through with taking the kids to the show. Now he's got to be a part of it. The whole thing with him having to kind of experience the nightmares that the kids would have had, I thought was actually kind of an interesting added level of that punishment that real world no one gets to experience. You know, if you let your baby brother watch a scary movie and he's up all night because of nightmares, you don't get to experience what he's going through. And it's kind of funny that Wicked did. So it was kind of a interesting added level to it. But again, golly, Sun Stars, Season Scepters, Dream Suckers. I mean, this planet's just got the toys. Baron, I like how you called it like Ewok tech, you know, as if it's like Tony Stark's lab with the Mark 42, right? This was, oh yeah, I got new armor over there that, steals dreams.
You know, it's funny that, I mean, this is, in a kind of a weird, twisted way, this is the Ewok version of like Ghost Rider's Penance Stare or Marvel UK's Clat the Shamer, who shows up and can visit the horrors that you visited on others onto you. It's kind of interesting to see that type of concept that we see in sort of telepathic stories, more hero-based stories, like superhero-based stories, used within Star Wars, because it doesn't get used all that much when the Force and telepathy seem like they're such an inherent part of Star Wars.
The next episode, or the next story we're going to discuss tonight, is The Tragic Flute, also originally released on November 15, 1986. Nisa nearly loses her ankle bracelet in the river, but King Elbo saves it for her. When he tries to present her with lovely jewelry instead of her simple ankle bracelet, she refuses until it is the correct one. For her honesty, she is given all of the jewelry. When Latara hears this, she intends to get a new flashy flute to replace the ones that her friends made for her that is apparently not good enough anymore. When she drops the flute in the water, Elbo tempts her with fancy ones and then pulls up hers. Latara says that they all belong to her, rather than being honest. For her lies, she is taken captive by Elbo to his underwater lair, where she will be punished for her greed. With the help of a fish that Tebow calls upon, they travel to Elbo's coral castle in a large bubble. They are able to free Latara and then find themselves face to face with Elbo while trying to leave. Seeing how much they care for Latara, Elbo sets up a test for her. If she passes, they all can go free. If she fails, they are all captives. Latara is sent onto a path with a ton of valuable items. She is to find the most valuable and return it to Elbo. When she finds the flute that her friends made among the treasures, she realizes that is what she should be looking for and returns it, claiming that it is the most valuable. She has passed Elbow's test. For trying to save her, Teebo is given a kiss from Latara, and all of the Ewoks are able to return to the surface. So, we have another morality tale. What did you guys think?
I thought this one was just pretty dumb. I mean, it's just, you know, you get this king, this underwater king, lives in a lake or whatever, who, you know, he's judge, jury, and executioner for whether you're going to be honest or greedy. And, you know, admittedly, we would probably all want to see Latara pay for her self-centeredness and just, you know, being greedy. But even I kind of think that's like, wow, because she went back and wanted to get a pretty sparkly flute and instead of a wooden carved one that was kind of crude, you're going to hold her captive forever? Come on, this was scarier than Horville's Huts of Horrors.
That's the Greek mythology aspect almost of it, right? It's the moral tale where something horrible will happen to you if you don't do what is morally right by, you know, in that case, by the gods' standards, in this case, by this King Elbow, who probably, knowing Endor the way we do, has siblings out there named King Knee, King Knuckle. But in this case, what causes me to kind of shake my head at this episode, it's very in keeping with the characters as we know them. Let's put it that way. We've got a situation where Nyssa, who all of a sudden loses this ankle bracelet I don't think have ever seen her wearing before, and it's a huge deal that she loses it. She's honest the way we expect her to be. She gets it back. Latara shows up. She is going there just to get something. Again, so if you do something for selfish reasons, whack, whack, over the head, you will pay, whack, whack. But when she lies, she gets taken down there for her punishment, and when they send her on the path to try to make this deal, where it is her and her friend's fate on the line, she still doesn't really get it. Because she's in there walking amongst all those items, and she's going like, oh, this is pretty, this is cool, this is awesome, these are all valuable, woohoo! And she's having all kinds of fun picking through the items and seeing what's kind of cool amongst it, even though her butt's on the line, and now she's put her three friends' butts on the line. And when she finds the flute that they made for her, and remembers Teebo talking about how, and Wicket and Teebo talking about how they made it for her, and Teebo even carved parts of it himself, it's not that she says, wow, I'm afraid of losing them, this has more value because this was made by them. No. She says, oh, I get it. And then she goes in and basically reluctantly says, this is the more valuable because it was given to me by my friends. She doesn't have a change of heart. She's still the same stuck-up little rhymes with witch that she's been this entire season. She's only getting it right because she knows their butts are on the line. She has learned squat. And that causes me to look at this episode as maddeningly consistent, but also really frustrating in the end. Latara is Latara is Latara, long as it's season two.
Wow, guys. I totally see it the opposite way. I see this as Latara's redemption story. She could have easily at the end.
Really? Sorry. She
are you serious?
Didn't want to die.
Yes. No. I really
do. She was right because somebody has a gun to my head.
Well, she just figured out the riddle, that's all.
It does not matter whether someone has a gun to your head or not. Your nature is your nature and is your nature. At the end, when she was in that cave full of jewels and goodies, no matter what, we've seen Latara throw her friends to the fire or has been willing to throw her friends to the fire. Latara has tried to run away with the Jindas to try to get away from her village. She, in her heart, in her soul, she would have took those jewels, as many as she could, and just said, all right, well, time to start a new life. But she didn't. She picked up that flute. She realized that her friend, she thought about it, realized it was her friends that made it for her, you know, and that was the most important thing. She figured that out for herself. Nobody went in there and told her that. She had to figure that out for herself, because when Wicket says, you know, I carved it myself, of course you did, you know, she didn't care about that in the beginning. But that was the thing that she understood at the end to redeem herself. Also, she gives Teebo a kiss. She's been so crappy with Teebo in season two this whole time. She gives him a kiss. Why does she give him a kiss? Because she's redeemed. This is her redeeming episode, guys.
Baron, I can't disagree with you more.
Can we hear very quickly? I've got the audio queued up of how Latara reacts when she finds that flute. This is what you're hearing, folks.
How did this ugly thing get here?
But Latara, we
She understands the riddle. She hasn't learned squat.
No, that's her redeeming. She understands. She's had a epiphany that this is the important thing. She understands now, because even when she sees it, the thing, she's still in her heart. She's like, oh, this thing. But she understands it. It's, oh, I understand now. I am a what rhymes with witch, and I need to give Tebow a kiss.
No. Oh, my God, no. She realizes that if she takes all the other jewels, she's not getting out of there alive. If she plays King Elbow's game, then she'll be able to get free. Because at the end, doesn't she still ask for the fancy flute anyway? And they have to basically drag her out? She learned nothing.
Isn't that the old classic philosophical thing when it comes to morality, right and wrong, and this idea that it's not so much that you determine whether someone is moral or someone has character by what they do when others are looking or they could be punished for doing wrong or rewarded for doing right. It's what happens whenever they're kind of on their own and they're not under the gun that makes the character. I mean, this is someone who is only doing it because of the danger involved. We saw what she was like earlier. She didn't give a crap about that flute until her butt was on the line. And granted, this could be simply the fact that the writers of this series really didn't have anything in mind as far as character development goes. But if this really was a changing moment for Latara, shouldn't she, from here on out, whether in production order or airing order, shouldn't she be less of a skanky, pain-in-the-butt, annoying individual to her friends than she was before this episode? If this is her redemption, where's the redeemed version of Latara later? I'm not.
Hey, listen. Have you ever known someone who was in the Hell's Angels or something, was a biker, and then became a good person?
Oh, yeah, totally, Bear. All of my Hell's Angels friends.
But they're still, no, I'm just saying, my point is that people can be redeemed. They're still going to have their nature, what they grew up with, what they believe, but they can be redeemed and can be softened. Answer me this. Why did she give Tebow a kiss if it wasn't her redeeming moment? Why give Tebow a kiss? He had nothing to do with him, with her helping or saving the day. Why do that?
Tease. No, I'm kidding.
She was putting on a show for Elbow.
See, I really did miss my friends. We can go now, right?
It's because...
Nathan, in that snippet you just played, I don't get it in her voice. I don't hear her say, oh, I get it. I guess it's more valuable because it came from my friends. I heard that like, oh, I get it. It's more valuable because it came from my friends. Now, I don't think she's a changed character, and I think she's kind of getting the riddle, but I think there's a little bit of, oh, you know, I get it. I should value my friends a little bit more. But you know what? At the same time, like with you and Jonathan, I'm with you guys that I think she's just, you know, learning the lesson for the day and will live to skank another day. I mean, she's going to be who she is. This is an alternate event, although it should be. And I'm sure I wasn't the only person, you know, certainly when the other Ewoks who thought their lives were on the line, when they said, well, we're going to give Latara a final test for all of your lives. I mean, I can imagine the other three Ewoks thinking, oh, God, we're all dead. She's not going to pass anything.
I guess it's the way that they draw her reactions, because you couple the line that she gives with the frown and the look on her face. And you take that and couple it with the way that they have her posture, the way they have the look on her face. When she goes and delivers it to Elbow, it feels like she's just doing it because she's, as I think Jonathan said, she's figured, or maybe it was even Jared, she's figured out the riddle. It's not that she's figured out the message. She's figured out the riddle. It's the difference between, what was it, listening and hearing, right?
Well, I think we can all agree that this was definitely a character moment for Latara, a character building moment for her. And I'm happy because she's gorgeous.
I don't know how to answer that.
Jerry, did they make a vintage Latara stuffed animal that we need to get for Barrett?
I don't want that. What I really want is a life-size Nisa with an ankle bracelet. Ooh, Nisa has an ankle bracelet. That's what I liked.
Barrett, you're scaring the crap out of me, man.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
The fur will fly, as we said.
The next episode we're going to discuss tonight is Just My Luck, released November 22nd, 1986. When Milani's efforts at painting are unsuccessful, Wicket shares the tale of how he almost quit being a warrior once because of a run of bad luck. We flash back to when the young Ewoks finally take their skills test. Nisa passes to be trained as a tribal leader. Latara passes to become a designer hood maker. Tebow passes to be trained as Logray's apprentice. Wicket, meanwhile, will be tested for his potential to become an Ewok warrior. Wicket is very nervous, so Tebow brings him a luck sprite to help calm him down. When Wicket announces plans to gain a score that no one else has ever attained, he certainly seems to be on track for that goal by scoring the lowest ever. But when they realize that the luck sprite is actually a bad luck sprite, Wicket is allowed to retake the test. Wicket, though, is so down that he refuses to retake the test. Resigned to his fate as a stable boy, Nissa and Latara stage Latara being in trouble so that Wicket can save her, but he botches the rescue, just adding to his depression. Wicket then travels to the Cavern of Broken Dreams where he intends to stay, but Tebow brings the bad luck sprite to explain things. When a giant spider attacks Nissa, the bad luck sprite's powers cause them to be in even bigger trouble. Despite this, Wicket saves the day out of his caring for Nissa and shows his skills. He has broken the power of the bad luck sprite, which leads him to retake the warrior's test, passing it. After hearing Wicket's tale, Milani decides not to give up on her own dreams. So, guys, what did you think?
You know, first of all, I like how Milani's down, and Wicket immediately makes it all about him. Hey, let me tell you a story about me.
So the funny thing is, I was thinking the opposite, that it's nice that Milani is down, and Wicket, the one who at least all through season one seemed to be brushing off her affections, is the one who tries to make it better. You know, this is one of those times where I actually kind of liked Wicket's characterization in relation to her. I'm not sure where they get the whole bad luck sprite thing. I guess that's something that's not sold in my area of the country. We just got regular Sprite and Sprite Zero. But this is an interesting one because it does something that I think outside of a part of Sunstar versus Shadowstone, we haven't really seen much in Ewoks, and I guess a tiny bit maybe of the First Apprentice. It gives us a story that's pretty much rooted in a flashback. We've got the framing story being about Milani at the very beginning of but most of it is looking back, and that's something that's caused a lot of people to kind of scratch their heads looking at this, trying to figure out when must this happen. And the best I can figure is this must be sometime between seasons one and two. I mean, they're fairly young, and you would maybe think it could fit in season one or something, but given that their characterizations are closer to season two, I'm guessing it must be in between. So it's kind of in that lost little era, we get this. And maybe what's changed is they've all taken that step up. We talked about the idea that maybe they move through maturity levels, for better or worse, between the two seasons. Maybe this is indicative of that, because they are going through these trials, these tests for skills. Theoretically, that could be something marking a passage of time and of passage from either childhood to adolescence or whatever you want to call it on Endor. I thought that was kind of an interesting way to tell this story.
And you mentioned the trials. You know, I think that was probably my favorite part of the episode, was getting a sneak peek into the communist society that is Ewok on Endor, where you're going to take a test and this is what you're going to do, okay? And I like that Latara is going to be a hood maker. You know, I was always thinking, what is she going to do? Is she going to play the flute? Is she going to be an actress in the Ewok? She's going to be a hood maker. We see Tebow take his test, and he has to make a plant grow. That's how he is able to use magic that could possibly do Earth or Endor climate change. He should have been taking an IQ test. So I like to see the fact how Ewoks got their jobs, you know?
Nathan, the only reason I don't quite see it the way you described it is that he ends up telling a story about how he didn't give up, but the reasons he failed wasn't really his fault. But Milani, you're a terrible painter. But hey, hang in there. There was a time where I struggled, but turns out I was just cursed. Which, by the way, if you find out a sprite, a luck sprite, is a bad luck sprite, you kill it.
True. Not to mention, I mean, shouldn't that have been something Tebow asked? Hi, you're a luck sprite. You want to come with me? Now, are you a good luck or a bad luck sprite? Saying, what's up with going to, you know, my dreams have been destroyed. I'm going to visit the Cavern of Broken Dreams. Is that down the Boulevard of Broken Dreams for all the Green Day fans? I mean, what is this cavern supposed to be?
They got a place on Endor for everything.
We got the Black Cavern, which is another place they go to get special stone for trials back in the comics. There's all kinds of crazy different features on this forest moon, which apparently is not all a forest either.
No, not so much. And we'll learn they've got something for everything. You know, whatever you're feeling, you feel like being in a lot of nothing? Well, in the next episode, we're going to go check out the Vacant Valley.
A sunny day in the void, as they might say.
I wouldn't quite go that low on it, but all right.
I'll tell you one thing. I almost lost it when Nisa lost her lasso. I was like, finally, Nisa has to figure out another way to win without her lasso. But I almost lost it. I was like, yes! And my son was like, don't cheer for this.
That's horrible. I was laughing pretty hard whenever Latara wound up in the water. You know, help, help. And here comes Wicket to save the day, and all he manages to do is wind up dumping her into the water underneath.
He did that on purpose, though.
You know, if I was him, I probably would have, too.
If you were him, Nathan, you would have held her under till the bubbles stopped.
That's true, but he wasn't in a position to do that. He was pretty high up. He'd have to drop a big rock on her or something. I'll save you. Grab this. Boom.
Well, speaking of obnoxious, the next episode is Bringing Up Norky, released November 22nd, 1986. In this episode, Shodu Warwick offers to watch Norky for a neighboring family of, I don't know, kangaroo things. Norky, a troublemaker, wreaks havoc, making himself look good and making Wicket and Tebow look like troublemakers. He steals cookies, making it look like Wicket and Tebow ate them all. Then he uses the cookies as a lure to get Baga to break up a warrior council meeting, getting Nisa in trouble. He also tricks Latara into falling into the mud, blaming her for her own clumsiness. The young Ewoks don't want Norky to stay around with them any longer, so they use Logri's globe to find a place to send Norky, but when Tebow makes it larger, it rolls off its pedestal and chases them around Logri's hut. They finally decide to send Norky to the Vacant Valley. They pretend to have a lost treasure map, leading Norky to take the bait, grabbing the Vacant Valley map left for him, and stealing a nearby readied glider. This sends him to the Vacant Valley. Logri notices the map missing and mentions that this is the time in which great holes appear in the Vacant Valley, sucking things into them never to be seen again. Despite the four young Ewoks' annoyance with Norky, none of them want to see him harmed, so they head to the Vacant Valley. Tebow and Wicket save Norky, identifying themselves as his friends, which is what he so desperately needs. They are all three then saved by Nisa and Latara, using Norky's tail to save them from a sinkhole. Norky finally leaves, but the five had become friends during his visit. Now, I do have to say that if I was Wicket, Tebow, Latara, and Nisa, and Norky was acting this way, I just would have killed him and ate him.
It's descended to Mustafar, or Endor's version of Mustafar.
Yeah, it is pretty harsh what they do to him, the idea, well, we're tired of him, so we're going to send him off to this land. Even if they didn't know, which they didn't, about the fact that it was a time of year that the ground opens up and just swallows things up, this kind of earthquake season thing that's going on. They're sending him to basically the middle of nowhere because they're sick of him. Don't mind the fact that he's just a kid and they're supposed to be looking out for him along with Shodu and such. No, no, no. Just send him away. This would be like the equivalent of, I'm tired of the screaming of the child I'm babysitting, so I'm just going to take him to downtown Atlanta and drop him off in a park and hell with him. If they can find their way back, fine. If not, no problem for me. That's pretty harsh to do with this guy.
You know, this episode reminds me of the show Wife Swap, where, and not so much the wife swap, but when the kids have to go to different houses, and it's like the white kid who has to go to the black person's house where there's like terrible rules, like overbearing rules, like, no, you cannot do this. You can't have more than one soda. And like the kids getting blamed for it when it's actually Norky. Norky is the devil, y'all. This guy is the devil. You see some of these faces he made when, and then to turn around and smile at Shodu. Oh, this character. I love him.
The word you're looking for is sociopath.
I was like, what's the kid? Is it just Junior? Is that what they called him in the movie Problem Child? I mean, that's what Norky basically is. I mean, he's this. And the message of, see, sometimes the little jackasses, they're only that way because they need friends. And there's a point in your life where that message kind of resonates. And, you know, when you're a kid, it's maybe this kid's a bully because the kid needs friends. But eventually you get to that point in your adult life where it's, you know, oh, this person's being a douchebag just because they need friends. Hell with him. If he talks to me, I'm knocking him out. He can go to hell. You know, it's just you miss out on that when it comes to the message here is great for kids. But watching it as an adult, you're like, oh, screw Norky.
No, this kid actually reminds me of kids that I've seen either in my practice or just out in the community. And I always, in the back of my mind, say, that kid needs BK therapy. You know what BK therapy is?
A butt
kicking?
Yep, there you go.
Very nice.
Yeah, he's just a kid. He just wanted his attention. He's more of a hyper kid, Norky is. But I like the fact that, you know, he does some things like Latara. I mean, some of the things you could say, hey, he might deserve it. But Latara gets pushed in the mud. And it, when he pushed Latara in the mud, and you know, I love my girl Latara. I was like, oh, no, he didn't. And I did the head wave and the whole thing. I was like, this guy doesn't know who he's messing with. And speaking of Latara, you know, I never noticed that Latara's back before, but they kind of really show her back. Does Latara has like a tramp stamp in the back, doesn't she? Her fur?
Wow, dude. I don't know. I've never really looked that closely, but I'll be sure to get right on that.
You know, the credit I'll give this show is that it set up Norky very well. As an audience member, I hated Norky myself. So they did a good job of portraying him in the intended way. So I'll give the show credit for portraying that properly. But at the same time, I thought the part of it was kind of lame because, you know, you get that first bit where he takes all the cookies and the mom turns around and goes, I can't believe you ate all the cookies. It's like, hey, you know, no, they're in his pouch. Just look. You know, I mean, it's not like there was no evidence to the crime. It's no, mom, really, the cookies are in his pouch. Look, we didn't take. I mean, look, are there crumbs in my teeth? I mean, they could have easily had beaten Orky at his own game in the first round.
I think it would have been a lot more rewarding for us as an audience if they had just beaten Orky.
And you know Norky's mom has to be laughing her butt off after she leaves him. She comes back at the end all smiles. You know, she's had a great day because she's been away from that child. And no, Berent, I went back and tried just now while they were talking, and I don't see a tramp stamp on Latara unless I'm looking at the wrong frames.
Her fur points an arrow to the nether regions.
That is true. She has the white fur on her back comes down to a point in the back, which does, by being a point, technically point to her butt. But I'm not sure if that counts as a tramp stamp, or I don't even want to think about it. You're something wrong with you, boy.
But I pointed you out. I made you look at something. I opened your eyes.
Oh, and I'll never unsee it. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank my co-hosts for opening my eyes to certain aspects of Ewoks that I hadn't quite considered. It's been, as always, a very enjoyable time discussing these old, classic Star Wars expanded universe material with you. I will see you all next week, where we discuss the final three episodes of the Ewoks animated series, Battle for the Sun Star, Party Ewok, and Milani the Warrior. Till then, yub yub.
See you guys next week.
Bossk!
Yup, yup, Commander.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Jerry, Jonathan, Nathan, and Berent. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2013, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Horrorvilles, Horrorvilles, out of horrors, Horrorvilles.
Starting with Horville's Hut of Horrors.
Say it three times fast. Say it three times fast.
Well, speaking of obnoxious, the next episode is bringing up North.
Hey, was that a crack on me there?
No, not at all. We're talking about Wicket, remember?
Oh, he's obnoxious. Cool.
Till then, yub yub.
See you guys next week.
Bossk.
Yep, yep, Commander.
Bossk.
Yeah, wait, every time he says, I kind of wanted to go there. Dengar.
Yeah, somebody, well, they say Dengar. Oh,
Bossk.
IG-88, something, you know. Zuckas.
Zuckas would be good.
Yeah, Zuckas would be good.
Zuckas.
Zuckas does sound like something you'd yell before you attack someone.
Zuckas!
Maybe that's what they call the way that the hair works on Latara, Zuckas.
Oh, God.
Ooh, I do.